Roots and Shoots with Joe and Sabrina. On Afternoons, 102.5 ABC Perth and ABC Radio WA.
G'day, Subby.
Hello, Joe.
You enjoyed the Skyhooks. I know you wish you were still living in the 70s, my friend.
I know. It was a time of much dancing, I have to say, Joe. Much dancing.
You've never stopped.
No.
Got lots and lots of questions on the text line already coming through, but we do have some lines free, so give us a call. Sabby, last week you told Mary that she thinks only 5% phosphorus in a native pot plant soil mix to transplant her plants was required, and she's found a potting mix, which I think you are looking at, and she's
I am indeed.
It has no percentage stated. Is she okay with it?
She is absolutely. And because I recognise the back of the bag, I know that potting mix. And you will notice that it says low phosphorus. So that is perfectly fine to be able to pot your natives up in that.
Okay, Mary, you've got the tick of approval from the gardening guru. Somebody else has sent through a picture, and I think they may have been at one of the local government plant sales because it looks like one of those seedlings. I happened to pick up a whole bunch of natives on the weekend. Can you tell them what that plant is?
Yeah, well, I can tell them that it is definitely a Melaleuca, but which species of Melaleuca? I'd say it's one of the smaller Melaleucas. So it's probably only going to get to around 40, 50 centimetres. And they're beautiful. I should imagine it's going to have blue flowers, that one.
There you go. They're beautiful, aren't they, Sabby?
Love Melaleucas, and so do the native bees.
I'm not going to tell you about all my gardening. Let's move on to the questions because the phones have gone absolutely nuts. Peter's in Eton, and I think he's got a question about basil. Over to you, Peter.
Hello. Lived in Darwin for 20 years and grew basil like a weed. And it grew all year round, but have struggled to get it to grow down here. Is there a variety that I need to...
The annual basil that we all love usually goes off in winter, so it doesn't like our winters. But the Thai basil does really, really well, Pete. So I would go and get Thai basil if I were you, and that's perennial and you have it all year round and it lasts for usually about 3 to 5 years and it self-seeds in your garden. So that's the one you want.
That's the one that's sort of a maroney blue colour, is it?
Yes. And has the blue-coloured flowers.
Yeah.
It's quite it's a stronger flavour, so you only need a small amount. But it's a beautiful basil, goes really well in all your Asian stir fries and things.
That's for sure. And when do I prune my lemon and my lime? When is the best time?
So your lime is probably fruiting like a demon at the moment. Lemons, you can basically prune any time of the year except from November through to March.
Happy pruning. Let's head to Bunbury. Jeff, I think you've got a question about weeds, or you want some advice about weeds, if I've got it correct.
You have got it correct, yes, indeed. I'd like to know if it's possible to spray a weed killer around the drip line of citrus trees prior to banging on some compost and cow poo.
Yes, you can, but you can't use anything with glyphosate in it, Jeff. You've got to use the one that is an organic weed killer that has pelargonic acid in it. So it's the oil from pelargoniums. If you go to a nursery, they will point you in the right direction. So that's fine to use around the citrus, but I would not use anything else.
That's lovely. Sabrina, thank you so much.
Well, it's my pleasure, Jeff.
Good on you, Jeff. Get rid of those weeds, but we try not to kill anything else in the process. Isn't that right, no. Sabby?
And well, because citrus, you know, is surface feeding. So if you put glyphosate around, you're going to knock your citrus off as well.
And just while we're on weed killer, there are some questions about grass. It is that time of year. Have you got a suggestion there?
To get rid of weeds in grass.
That is it.
Yes. Well, the same thing. Now, if you've got a broadleaf like Sir Walter Buffalo or the palmetto, then there are selective herbicides that you can use on those. If you've got a fine leaf grass, then you have to get... So the difference is getting selective herbicides or your spot spray with a weed killer or a herbicide that knocks everything off, but you just spot spray it. So there's two alternatives. But if you have broadleaf lawn, you have to look at the packet or the bottle, comes in bottle, and make sure that that particular selective herbicide is okay to use on broadleaf lawns.
Hey, Kevin, what did you want to ask Sabby?
Good afternoon, Sabby and Joe. I was just wondering, like probably a million other people in Australia, what's the best way to get rid, my terminology is three-leaf clove with that little yellow flower on it?
They are horrendous, aren't they?
I know. Sour sop.
And that goes away, or do you have to bum up, head down, and pull them up?
Oh, so much digging, isn't it, Sabby? Because if they just rip off and that doesn't do anything.
I know. So if you just pull them, all the little cloves that they shoot from, you leave in the ground and, in fact, disperse them. So no point in pulling them up unless you're going to do it for them consistently over the next 8 years. If that's not in your calendar, you can spray that. Glyphosate doesn't work. They kind of laugh at that. Okay. So I use the pelargonic acid, and what it does is it burns all the leaf tissue. Now, it doesn't kill it. They will come up again, Kevin, but you spray them the second time and then that knocks them off. As soon as you pull them and you disturb all the cluster of the little bulbils at the bottom, they spread even more.
You just saved me a lot of work. Well, I'm not going to go for what did you call that stuff?
Okay, so it's an organic weed killer.
Yep.
That has the oil of pelargoniums, basically geranium oil. Yeah.
Happy spraying, less pulling out, Kevin. Let's head to Duncraig. Good afternoon, Ash.
Hi there. I went to your wonderful plant swap and got myself three luther seeds, which have just been marvellous. I've got these amazing, huge, big luthers hanging off this beautiful vine.
Yeah.
But what I want to know is when they are ready to pick, can I leave the vine? Should I take the vine out and start it again next year? Can I cut it back? What do I do with the jolly vine?
I would actually leave the vine. Now, the only reason that you would pull it out, because it will provide a framework for the new one that you're putting in once you've harvested the seeds. The only reason you would take it out is if it's disease with powdery mildew or some other fungal disease.
But it stays
as a framework. No, I would leave it in, Ash. I wouldn't pull it. Great. I wouldn't cut it down.
Great. Thank you very much. That's what I'll do.
People should use loofah as an ornamental climber because they're so beautiful.
So beautiful indeed. Now, we're going to have a chat to David next. Mm. And I think David is in Scarborough. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, ladies. I have a small lime tree that has a really lot of baby limes on it. I wanted to say, do I thin them out to get a better crop? What do you think? Because it's really loaded.
Yeah, because limes are toads of things. And what they do is they give you fruit and you go, oh, glory. And then they just dump the whole lot. So how old is the lime tree?
It's only young. It's about two years old. But you it's really going gangbusters.
Yeah. You need to strip 2/3 of those limes off, I'm afraid.
That's okay. I'm willing to do that. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. And that, then the energy goes back into the root system and the leaves, and it needs, limes need a fairly established root system to actually hang on to the fruit. So what you lose this year, you will gain next year.
Thank you very much for your help.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
I have, I've now found Steve, who is in the Swan Valley. What's happening with your apricot trees, Steve?
Hi there, ladies. Sabby, I have decided to give up on an apricot tree that is 12 years old, but is one of these ones that requires quite high chill hours. And I'm wondering if you can recommend me a variety that requires low chill hours. This one is having an appointment with my tractor very shortly.
Oh, dang, dang, da-dang, dang, da-dang, dang. Okay, now, there has been a fair bit of work on the low-chill apricots, and I happen to know that all the nurseries are bringing in their bare-rooted fruit trees in the next 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks. I would hold off, Steve, for 2 or 3 weeks because there are new hybrids that have come in that are better for our climate. Some of them are semi-dwarf, which is ideal because you can net the actual tree. And I'm not up to date with what's coming here to WA because, of course, everything has to go through quarantine. But if you wait until you go to a nursery, they're going to have all the ones that they bring in to Perth. Most of them are the ones that don't require a big chill. So I would contact the nurseries or go online and see which apricots they're bringing in.
Thanks very much for that. Also, for Kevin that rang earlier, as a farmer who has dealt with 2.5 acres of South
Oh, oh my God.
Metsulfuron is useful. However, be very careful where you spray it.
Yeah, yeah. It's effective, but for the home gardener, I don't know if they need to resort to that. I can understand why you have, Steve.
Steve.
I don't think the home gardener needs to use metsulfuron.
Good on you, mate. Alicia, over to you. I think fruit tree question as well.
Yes, and apologies about the voice. I rang you probably about 3 years ago asking about what fruit trees to put a placenta under.
Yes.
We're up in Lower Chittering, gravelly, beginning the scalp soil. Problem is we've drilled a bore since and discovered that one is slightly on the saltier side. And speaking to a wonderful horticulturalist hailing from the Swan Valley at the Perth Garden Fest a month ago, he said to hold off on planting anything until we sorted the water.
Yeah.
Hopefully putting in another 130,000 plus litre tank. Therefore, what would, you know, occasionally maybe getting a half cup of bore water, half rainwater mix, what could you plant fruit tree wise still on top of something?
Well, you need to clear steer of any citrus. You could definitely put in fig, you could put in a quince tree, you could put a locust in. Even the stone fruit's not going to do very well.
With the water, with the salt.
Yeah. More of the Mediterranean stuff will deal with salt. And just the other ones I've given you now. But I think what you find is they'll get... You could try plums. Plums are a bit hardier. And you'll need 2 plums. For cross-pollination, you'd probably try a plum.
Yeah. No, because we stuck the last one under an olive tree and they're going gangbusters, but there's only so many olives you need.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You don't need 50 olive trees. But Certainly, quince, you could even try pomegranates.
Oh, pomegranates are beautiful. Alicia, so yeah. many options. And I love the placenta being planted under the tree, Savvy. Gorgeous.
It's so lovely. I've had quite a few phone calls from new parents that want to know what they could grow on their placenta. And I think it's so lovely because as the tree grows, the baby is growing too. I think it's a really beautiful thing to do.
It is. And then, you know, when the baby's a bit bigger, you lie them under the tree and on it goes.
Yep.
Life, life, life. Okay, let's go to Linton, who is in Coolbinia. Hello, Linton.
Hi, good afternoon, ladies.
G'day, Linton.
How are you?
Very well.
A question you've probably had, I'm just a suburban amateur gardener, planted a so-called Calamata olive tree from the nursery about 10, 12 years ago in the back garden.
Yeah.
Hoping to get some fruit to do some pickling and had nothing. About 3 years ago, I got about half a dozen fruit on it. One time, one only, no buds, no flowers this year. It's healthy, about 3 metres high. And I'm wondering, severe prune or the ultimate prune, take it out or keep it as a nice little ornamental. It's going to do nothing.
Don't take it out, Linton. Don't take it out. Now, a damn good pruning is a great idea. And how often does it get watered?
Oh, it's on reticulation. It gets watered frequently.
Yeah, a bit too much water, Linton.
Oh.
You need to toughen that little sucker up a bit. So no more than twice a week in summer. Like once a week, once a fortnight. You will need to fertilise it to get fruit.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's getting too much water and it's been looked after too well.
It may be overshadowed by a very healthy, huge avocado tree next to it, but it gets plenty of sun.
Plenty of sun, that shouldn't bother it at all.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So when's it green?
Well, it hasn't given you any fruit, has it?
Nope.
No. Well, I'd actually get stuck into it. Usually you wait until after it finishes fruiting, but yours hasn't. Mm. So it doesn't really matter. If you've got time, if you've got time over the next 4 weeks, I'd hook in, Linton.
Well, we've got a council clean-up going on at the moment that can take the green
stuff. There you go. That's answered your question.
Good on you, Linton. Nina's in Guelup. We're talking passion fruits now. Good afternoon, Nina.
Oh, hello there. My question is, I have a lovely passion fruit vine which has given me hundreds of passion fruit, but now there are still plenty on there, but they're just not dropping now. And I'm just wondering, are they going to ripen or is that it now? And when should I prune it?
I reckon they will ripen. So because we've got this extension of summer, which is sort of like spring weather.
Yeah.
Now, what happens with passion fruit is the actual skin of the fruit may not look like it's ripe, but inside the fruit will be ripe. So you can pick it, bring it inside, put it in a bowl with apples or bananas, and over the period of 7 days, they will ripen enough to eat.
The
best time to prune is in spring.
Spring. Oh, okay. All right. I have been, sometimes they fall off and they're still green and I've just been putting them, you know, in the pantry in the dark and they have ripened up, which has been great. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I'll try
Absolutely.
That. Okay.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Okay,
Thank
Nina.
You so much.
So many fruit tree questions and questions about produce this afternoon. And I've got another one for you, Sabby. Stick in there because we're heading to Carol in Doubleview now, who's got a question about a mandarin tree. Good afternoon, Carol.
Hi, ladies. I wanted to move a 2-metre-high mandarin tree.
Yeah.
And the spot I want to move it to it's south on a fence, south facing, which was getting no sun at the moment. Mm. So I was thinking, could I put it in a bigger pot and put it in a sunny spot and then put it in its new position in spring?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, terrific.
Yep. No problem at all.
And the spot that it's come from, I wanted to put a macadamia nut tree.
Yeah, and perfect.
Could I put that in now?
Yes.
It's a sunny spot must. Where it was.
Yep, yep.
Oh, terrific.
Most definitely you can.
Good. All right.
And the cockies will love you for it.
Yeah. Terrific. Okay, thanks a lot.
Good okay, on thanks, you, Carol.
It is 9, no, it is not. It is 14 to 3 on 102.5 FM and ABC Radio WA. Sabrina Hahn answering all your gardening questions. Sabby, we've got a text from Carol in High Wycombe, and their ghost gum, I think it's a ghost gum, has got this awful line in the bark about 2 metres in length, 2.5 centimetres deep. They first saw it 2 months ago. No sign of insects. How concerned should they be about its health or stability?
Gum trees will do this from time to time when they're having a rapid growth rate. It's a very straight line that I can see. They don't need to be worried that it's borer. I think it's just a natural growth expansion crack. So at this stage, I don't think you need to worry about it.
Oh, that's great news. Yeah. Very, very, very good news indeed. Okay, let's go back to the calls. Stacey is in Quindalup. Good afternoon, Stacey.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm just wondering about Protea's. Yeah. We've got a Queen Protea, quite old. Not sure. We've had the property for about 13 years. And it's looking a bit shabby. When do we trim it, cut it back? Do we cut it back? I've been advised not to cut it back hard, but it's looking as though after it flowers, should we cut it back?
Yeah, I reckon with Proteas, you really do need to prune them. And usually the pruning is after each big flower spike. You can't cut them back. You can definitely take a third off them, Stacey, but you can't cut back into the really, really old wood. But they do need pruning. Otherwise, they get really sprawly and unruly, and then you only get, you know, you get all the growth just at the end and all the insides all dead looking.
Yes, that's exactly how it's looking,
yeah. Yeah. So continually prune it after flowering. Whenever the flowers come, then you need to prune that back at that point in time.
Oh, okay. All right. Mm. Okay, thanks, Sabrina. Appreciate that. Okay. What's the best thing to give it for goodness? What should we feed it?
It's part of the Proteaceae family. So definitely don't give it anything with more than 1% phosphorus. They actually don't mind sheep poo. They do quite well on sheep poo. So I would use a native fertilizer that's still got all the trace elements in it, but no more than 1% phosphorus.
Okay, good luck with that. 10 to 3, let's head to Lake Coogee. Good afternoon. Have I got Leanne here? I think I do. Good afternoon, Leanne.
Oh, good afternoon, ladies. How are you?
Yeah, good.
That's good. I'm just wondering, I have a 4-metre-high almond tree. Mm-hmm. Can I give it a really hard prune?
Yes, you can. So if you want to prune your almond tree, Leanne, it's best to wait until the end of June, July. Mm-hmm. And if you need to prune it hard, you can, but do you mean more than 50% or?
Well, not sure, going on your recommendation. I don't know how old it is.
Right.
Yeah, so it was at the house when we bought the house.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, but it's quite tall, and, of course, you don't get the almonds from the top. The birds get them. And,
yeah, of course they do.
Yeah, and I thought, well, maybe we could sort of bring it right down to some manageable level.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so the thing to remember when you are pruning a nut or a fruit tree is you have to think about the framework of the tree. So it sounds to me like you're going to have to take some branches off at the trunk, and then you'll prune the other branches by no more than 50%, like probably 35-40% would be ideal. Remember, you want the framework of the tree to be there. So you want even balanced branches on both sides, and you can actually open up the center a little bit, so it's more like a vase shape.
All right. And I've also got an avocado tree that has never produced any avocados. I believe I have to get another avocado tree to go alongside it, is that right? Yep.
Yeah.
And can I prune that as well? Can I give that a bit of a good prune?
Yeah.
Is that
absolutely sort
of a springtime thing, end of winter?
Don't do it in winter. Yeah. You're going to have to wait till spring.
You've got a lot of pruning on your hands.
I know.
let's move on to North Perth. Good afternoon, Mary. I think you have got something eating your lettuce.
Ooh. Yes, good afternoon. Yes, I've got lettuce seedlings in my veggie tank. And just the last few days, something's coming at night, eating it. There's no signs of any insects or anything. What on earth could be doing that? I've never had this happen before.
Ah, okay. So there's things called cutworms, which live in the soil and only come up at night. They're like a caterpillar. So they come up and then they just chew the tips off the base of your seedlings. There's also slugs. Now, slugs are really, really difficult to find, and they usually harbour underneath either the mulch or a pot or a leaf, or they get inside stuff and you can't actually see them. So snails and slugs are all around at the moment.
We were talking about this last week, weren't we?
Yeah.
Was it
and
salt?
There's no mulch on it, and it's just you know, the seedlings were growing really well, and then just the last couple of days, I've got no sign of anything.
No sign of, not even slaters?
No.
The other thing is the birds pull them out, but you would see them. If they had been pulled out of the ground, you would see them.
No, they're not pulled out. They've been nibbled.
They've just nibbled.
I reckon it's cutworm then, Mary.
Oh, Mary.
So what you need to do is just scratch around the seedling and then get something the size of one of those little yogurt pots, push it down around the seedling and see if that helps protect them.
Hopefully you managed to save some of your lettuce seedlings. One more call. We're going to squeeze in Joanne's in Balcatta and a question about soil for natives. Over to you, Joanne.
Hi, ladies. Thank you. I've got laryngitis.
Oh, you poor thing. You poor thing. What's your question?
My garden bed in Balcatta here is horrible. It's hobophobic. I want to improve it to prepare it for some native plants that I've bought, some Eremophilas and stuff. What can I do?
Okay, so you need to add clay and compost. Even though you're putting in native plants, the soil there is so hydrophobic, so you'll need to get some, you can buy clay in a bucket, and you need to mix about 10% of clay in with the soil, and then about 15-20% of compost. Mix that all up, and you have to use a wetting agent, Joanne. So once you've dug all that into the soil, then go over with wetting agent, and when you plant each individual plant, when you dig the hole, you have to use wetting agent again. Fill the hole up with water, put the plant in, use wetting agent again once it's planted, and water it in really well. And that's all you should need to do.
Happy, happy native planting, Joanne, and I hope your laryngitis improves. Sabi, thank you for your wisdom.
It is my pleasure, Jo.
We'll do it all again next Tuesday. That, of course, was Sabrina Hahn.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music and more.